It's Tuesday, March 17th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Everyone, got a great show lined up for you. We're live on Ustream. We've got a few people on there. Of course, all of you that are listening via the audio podcast, you're getting a little later, but strap in. Here it comes.
This is the Geek News Central Podcast, part of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. So grab a cup of coffee, take a seat, and crank up that volume. Because you're listening to Todd on the Geek News Central Podcast.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central Podcast, coming to you as live as it can be from the beautiful state of Hawaii, from the Geek News Central Studio overlooking Greater Oahu. Hey, I want to welcome everyone to the show. My name is Todd Cochran, and of course, you are listening to the Geek News Central Podcast. Make sure you get over to geeknewscentral.com. Check out the great content over there. Of course, check out our archive podcast available via the podcast link. If you are a new listener, we want to make sure that you get subscribed to the show. And you can do that by clicking on one of the icons on the website that is linking to either the iTunes button or the Zune Marketplace, or actually just, you know, use your favorite podcatcher and copy the RSS feed from the little button that says podcast, and that'll get your stuff automatically downloaded into your favorite device, and you can listen to me on the go. Well, I tell you what, it's been a great weekend here in Honolulu. The weather got pretty nice. It did over the weekend, but I spent most of the weekend indoors, partially to recover from jet lag. Plus, I studied all weekend. I've got a little project going that I haven't told all of you about yet, and I'm going to share with you at some point here in the near future. But studied all weekend, actually had a test to take today, and we'll see how that turns out, and we'll keep you advised on that. Just within like 15 to 20 minutes ago, Angelo, our lead developer over at Raw Voice, said, "Todd, it's ready." And I said, "Okay." I went over to blueberry.com, and I pressed on the login button, and sure enough, our implementation of OpenID is ready to go. It's rolled out, and he spent, well, it was about 3 o'clock in the morning his time when he finally went to bed, and so I know he was pushing to get that update out, and it's on the street, so I'm pretty happy now, because I think we are the first, or our site is the first podcasting community that really has this ability to now log in via OpenID. So, if you've got, if you've used an OpenID site before, it's really simple. You just basically, instead of logging in and providing a whole bunch of new credentials, you just log in with either your Google username or whatever that you may be using on a regular basis. Click sign in. It gives you a little authorization window. You punch another button. It brings you right back to the website. For those that already have accounts over there, we have a way for you to associate your current account with your OpenID account. Both accounts will continue to work, but it's just one way one of the things we've done to help listeners find, make it easier for them to sign up for the service, find podcasts and so forth. Basically, it gives them another avenue and makes it less painful to open up a new account. But all's going well here, staying very, very busy. And this week is really kind of my catch-up week. And I think you guys are going to see a flurry of activity on the Geek News Central website. A lot of stuff in the podcast and RSS feeds. You're going to see a whole bunch of data being punched through just because I got to get everything up. It's just been so long since I have. I've got a couple of videos I need to go back and re-edit where there were some mistakes. But there's just going to be a ton of content coming onto the site this week because I'm getting ready a week from, well, let's see here, what is it? Today's Tuesday. So a week from tomorrow, a week from Wednesday, I get on an airplane and I head out to the East Coast. And what I'm going to be doing is we're going to be having a series of podcaster meetups. My plan is, if everything goes right, on Thursday the 26th in the evening, I'm going to have a podcaster meetup in Columbus, Ohio. So if you are in the Columbus area, Feel free to give me a shout out at geeknews@gmail.com because we're going to have a podcaster meetup in Columbus if you're within striking distance, if you're in Cincinnati. Love to have you come down. I'll buy you dinner, and should be a great time, should be a lot of fun. And I haven't decided on a place yet. Angelo is going to choose the place that we're going to go eat. Angelo, our lead developer from Raw Voice, is going to be there. He's going to be hanging out. So we're going to have a lot of fun on that Thursday night. So if you want to meet up in Columbus, again, Thursday, March 26th, will be a podcaster meetup in Columbus, Ohio. Now, moving forward a couple of weeks, on the weekend of, let me bring it up here, April 11th. No, excuse me. The weekend of April 4th, we're going to have a podcaster meetup in San Antonio. Yes, great state of Texas. I'll be in Texas for 7 or 8 days. So we're going to have a meetup on Saturday, April 4th, in San Antonio. So if you are in the San Antonio area, definitely send me an email. Let me know that you're interested. Come on out. We'll have a nice dinner, hang out, and chat, and do the geek thing. On Friday, April 10th, we're going to have a podcaster meetup in Dallas. So there'll be a podcaster meetup in Dallas on Friday, April 10th, basically a week later. And then following that, I expect to have a podcaster meetup in Albuquerque, New Mexico on Tuesday, April 21st, okay? So definitely want to put those in your calendars. That kind of locks in my travel plans for the rest of the month. So 4 different podcaster meetups: Columbus, San Antonio, Dallas, and Albuquerque. Should be some great fun for all that come out. Definitely send me an email out to geeknews@gmail.com. Hey, I told you guys that we're going to start a new segment here in the podcast. And what I wanted to do tonight was to introduce the app section of the podcast and just talk about 2 apps that I've been playing with around on one of my mobile devices. Now, actually, what I've done, and for those of you that are on Ustream, I've actually got 2 apps I've been playing with for the last couple of days on my iPod Touch. And we've had some submissions from listeners of the show that submitted a couple of others. But, you know, being that I just got back from Japan, the one application that I used the most was a beginning Japanese words and phrases app that I used on my iPod Touch. And they have a free version and also a paid version. But I found that the free version was pretty good to basically learn basic Japanese. And I think what you'll find is you're going through the App Store, you're going to find a lot of these little applications for various languages that helps you learn the language in the local area. And the thing I like about this thing is that you can actually play the actual word so that you can actually hear how it's spoken in the correct pronunciation. So, of course, me being a destroyer of the English language, you can only imagine what I do to Japanese. So they have quizzes and flashcards, different categories you can look up. You can find this plugin by basically looking in the App Store for beginning Japanese words and phrases, or you can go over to the JapanesePage.com and you'll find a pretty good, you'll find the link there to the app. Now, another app that I've been playing with, and really this weekend was kind of Twitter catch-up time because I was kind of Twitter deprived being in Japan and not having connectivity for a number of hours each day. The application that I've been using on Twitter is called Twitterific, and the app I've been using on my iPod is Twitterific, and it's basically just a little app that you can use. It logs into your Twitter account and allows you to really kind of easily follow the discussion. Now, I didn't know if I would like using it because I've used Safari. I usually go to m.twitter.com and use that interface with Safari on the iPod Touch. But I kind of decided to play around with this Twitterific, and I was pretty pleased with its performance. Both of these apps are a free version. They do have a donation you can make to them if you want to. Some other applications that that I really weren't so notable that I've been playing with around is the USA Today plugin, where it gives you basically free news clippings and stuff. So that one was, you know, it was just a free one. I tried it out. Nothing really to call home to mama about. But these are really the 2 apps I wanted to talk about during today's show. If you have an app, and a lot of you sent me on Twitter, sent me the apps that you couldn't absolutely you could not live without. And what I've been doing is I've been writing all those down, and I've actually been loading them onto my iPod. I've been playing around with them a little bit, and I'll be talking about a couple of those on each show. Again, this is not just iPod-specific topics. This is also for those of you that are, you know, have different types of applications in the different types of mobile phones that are out there. So let me go ahead here and take care of a little business before we get into the regular content. Seems like I'm missing telling you guys about something. And I'm looking at my little list here. Oh, I think what happened on my way home is someone on the airplane was obviously sick because Saturday started feeling a little scratchy in the throat. So I immediately went and got, what is that medicine called? That stuff they're supposed to use before you get a cold. I don't know. It's that spray stuff. And they have the nasal swabs and everything. Started using those immediately Saturday. Sunday got progressively just a little bit worse. But today it kind of leveled off. So I'm fighting a little bit of a, I guess, sore throat / runny nose. So I apologize and coughing a little bit. So if I cough on you, big apologies in advance. Or if you hear me sniffling, I apologize. But I guess that's basically the wrap-up of what's going on around here. But again, if you're a new listener to the show, hey, make sure you get subscribed. And of course, if you're part of the Ohana, I want to thank you so very much for being subscribed and telling people about the show and, of course, supporting the podcast. And of course, all of our contributing authors over at Geek News Central, appreciate them as well. Hey, also, the design is ready. And Brian is going to send me over a graphic tomorrow, and I'm going to email out to everyone that had asked to see the pre-WordPress launch image. Finally, actually, the site is starting to be skinned. So we're getting real close where we're going to make a big transition from movable type to WordPress. And I think you guys, I'm really, really stoked about the new logo. Oh, yes, the new logo. The logo is being completely revamped. And I think once you guys, I got the idea, kind of saw something on the web, saw something on the TV, kind of saw, oh, that would make a good combination. And voila, Brian, the graphics developer, came up with something that I think is just going to, it's smoking. That's all I can say about the new graphics. So I'll be sending out emails to the folks that wanted to see the mock-up. We're still tweaking it a little bit, so don't worry. It's quite not locked in, but it's close. And I'll be sending that out to those of you as well. Also, going to be finally getting the t-shirt shop online and ordering t-shirts. Again, this is catch-up week because I am way, way behind a number of projects, and a bunch of you are owed t-shirts from how many months has it been now? 3-4 months? Isn't that horrible? It's just been absolutely horrible. It really has. So thank you for your patience. Really, thank you so much. Some of you probably have given up on me, but it's, you know, when you there's only two hands and so many hours in a day to take care of all this stuff. All right, let's take care of a little business here before we kick off the regular content tonight. And we're going to be having a roundtable this coming Saturday. I think it's going to be a great event. I hope that you come out and check out what we're going to be talking about. Andy's getting me the final itinerary, and I'm going to be posting that up on the website at techpodcast.com. But GoToMeeting, you know, business travel is a profitability killer. So do more and travel less with GoToMeeting, the easiest online meeting service. With just a click, launch sales presentations, training sessions, product demos, or even collaborative sessions. Right from your desk, GoToMeeting is so easy to set up and use, you'll have your first meeting running in seconds. Plus, hold as many meetings as you want for one flat rate, free voice IP and phone conferencing included. Try GoToMeeting free right now for 30 days. For this special offer, you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/techpodcast. That's with an S. That's gotomeeting.com/techpodcast for a free 30-day, no credit card required trial. Along with that, we want to thank, of course, longtime sponsor GoDaddy.com. Hey, you know something? I want to tell you a little story. Today, I actually saw something on Twitter. Someone said something about GoDaddy, and they're having a little problem with their account. And I said, hey, if you have any more issues, if you know something's going wrong, you know, just drop me an email. I don't know who you are completely, but you know, I can help you out. And the person Twittered back, said, oh, no. GoDaddy already took care of me. I'm like, well, how did they know so quick? She says, they're following Twitter. And so I busted out an email to a pretty high-level contact at GoDaddy, and I said, hey, heard you guys are doing tech support via Twitter. And the senior person at GoDaddy came back and said, yes, we've been doing it for a long time. Most of our messages back to people are private, but direct messages and so forth. But we've been very, very active in the space trying to help our customers out. And we watched the Twitter stream. I didn't even know. And I thought that was pretty cool. But if you want a domain name, if you want a dedicated server, a virtual dedicated server, shared hosting account, when you get to the checkout counter at GoDaddy.com, don't forget your old geek here at Geek News Central by using the promo code TODD. That'll save you 10% off in your order. Geek 5 will save you 20% on orders $20 or more. And, of course, that Todd20 code, that's the beauty one. Boy, I tell you, that'll save you a lot of money because you can get 20% off 1 year shared hosting accounts. Now, if you guys noticed on the last show notes, a couple of small changes, made some changes to some of the graphics, nothing big, but had a lot of people saying, hey, Todd, I don't know where to download your podcast directly from your main page. So I tried to make the little icon that we put on the page a little more apparent. It's going to be changing when the logo changes. I this is kind of, it's my version of putting a graphic together that kind of shows people how to download stuff or download the show manually. And of course, the big subscribe with iTunes button is on the page at all. But in the last show notes, I put in all the codes that are available for you guys to use. And there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of these codes. There's a code for every occasion, a code to save money in any dollar amount that you're spending. And just mix and match them up a little bit to figure out which one saves you the most. And you can find those on the website. All right, let's go ahead and move on here. Again, thanks for GoDaddy for being a longtime sponsor of the show. It's greatly appreciated. They definitely help us keep the lights on in here. Okay, moving on, and let me go ahead and cue things up here a little bit and make some changes. And I may actually have to stop the recording because, when you have a runny nose, there's not a lot you can do when you're talking continuously to deal with that. But it's live to hard drive right now, folks. Okay. All right. Let me go ahead and I've got Feed Demon booted up here. I got a bunch of stuff tagged up for you. How many of you saw the shuttle launch Sunday evening? I'm going to share with you an email at the end of the show from one of the listeners who was in the United States from Poland and actually saw the launch at the Cape. And I watched it on TV, and I guess everyone at the Cape said it was the most spectacular launch of the shuttle that they had ever seen. And it was partly because of going through the clouds and the change of the color of the plume, and people were just completely blown away. But the launch on HD looked pretty awesome. I was watching it streaming on the internet. And at the same time, I was watching, Fox or CNN. Somebody was carrying it live on the television. So it was kind of weird because I watched the shuttle launch, and a minute later, the stream caught up in the shuttle launch. So that was kind of cool. Got to watch it two times. But absolutely spectacular launch. Flawless. They're up there. They're doing okay. 13 or 14-day mission, I guess. And to power up the International Space Station, giving it the full load of solar arrays so that I guess they've got enough power up there. They'll have enough power up there to power like 40 different homes, and that's about the equivalent of the power load that they're able to carry. So I thought that was that's pretty amazing, that much power. So we'll keep you advised on how they're doing. Of course, you can watch ongoing coverage at NASA TV. And there'll be, of course, ongoing live coverage there. The docking happens today as well. Hey, kind of on the science front. And I wanted to kind of preload these science and space type stuff at the very beginning tonight. There's been a discovery where what they've been able to find is that, I guess I should back up. How many times have you seen these advertisements, memory boosting vitamins? How many times have you seen, do these types of things to increase your memory capacity? Well, scientists have found a telltale mental signature that predicts whether an experience will be remembered. Now, once deciphered, the signal could be used to help people know when their brains are primed to remember, perhaps by using a little application on a phone or something similar, something that will detect this trigger that they've been able to detect. Now, this is kind of cool because they found the signal in the medial temporal lobe. It's a region of the brain associated with memory formation, and they really don't know how the activation, they don't know what triggers the activation of this temporal lobe area that allows you to memorize stuff. But maybe at some point, we're going to be able, okay, it's time to study, right? You're going to get your break your books out for a college test, and you flip a little switch on your iPod or you're on your, you know, on your little device, and it puts your brain into memorization mode, and you go through and you study, and you turn that thing off when you're done, you know, and preload your brain. I'm telling you, stranger things have happened. And this is pretty amazing stuff that they've been able to detect when the brain is more receptive to memorizing stuff. So that's pretty cool. And they did this with a battery of tests, and they had remarkable results. And I think this will be well worth your read. This is an article that's up on Wired.com. All right, the Electronic Frontier Foundation is shining sunlight on docs that is pried from the feds. I guess over the years, the EFF, through Freedom of Information Acts, have obtained quite a few documents. And they have scanned all those documents and then put them online. And then they build a search engine, a custom search engine, to make finding information within those a lot easier to find. So if you're interested in some of the stuff that the EFF has been able to get out of the government hands through Freedom of Information Act, this is pretty cool. So this is all online now, and it's part of a database where you can go in and search and find information as well. So it would be nice if they had an index of all this stuff so that you kind of know, have an idea what's in the documents. But we'll see. We'll see how well that – when you go over there and check it out, let me know how well you were able to find stuff or if there was anything of interest over there. All right. Now, the RIAA, they said what? 3-4 months ago that they weren't going to be suing people anymore. Well, you know, everything they had in work, everything that they had stocked up, maybe 1,000, 10,000, 15,000, 100,000 cases, you know, they're still prosecuting those people. They're still going after them in court. It's unknown how many cases they've got in the pipeline still, but they're still going after people. And there's an interesting article on Ars Technica talking about a New Hampshire woman who's been sued by the RIAA, who really is, you know, pleading her case that she doesn't have a clue what she's being sued for. She knows now what, you know, what she's being sued for, but she's basically said there's no way based upon, you know, this old computer they had and how they used it, that they were actually sharing music. But it's a pretty good article. There's been a group of law students from the Franklin Pierce Law Center in Concord, New Hampshire, who have basically stepped up to help her. And they've deputized the law students to assist. And so they're going after – basically she's got an arm now to protect herself. She couldn't afford an attorney before. So she's got all these law students and a couple of professors that have gone to bat for her. And she goes to trial in the spring, over a 2 or 3 day trial they expect. But, you know, here we are. Well, we're not going to sue anybody anymore, and they still are. You know, when will the madness end? It's, you know, I don't know. I bet you we're going to be hearing about this for a long, long time. All right, over on the BBC, there is more discussion about this Conficker worm. You guys heard about this. We've talked about this at least 3 or 4 times on the show. They're saying that the Conficker worm will be active again on April 1st, according to analysis of the most recent variant. And what the reason they're worried about this is because since its first appearance in October 2008, it's infected more than 15 million computers. And it did that by only having like up to 20 or so, no, not 20. What was the number they said? 32 different kind of base servers to actually go out and do the infections. Well, now they're going to use 500 servers. This new variant will be using 500 servers to target a pool of 50,000 machines that will basically form this army to go out and try to infect Windows users that have not updated their Windows operating systems. And this could be, they feel that this could be a major, major attack, and that a lot of machines are going to get, you know, going to get hacked. So if you've got family members that have machines that are not getting updated, please, please, please tell them to, you know, get them upgraded. And if they're not, go over there and upgrade them for them, and, you know, make sure they're not infected already. But it could get real ugly here, and this thing is coming back with stronger than ever. So we haven't heard the last of this thing. You know, you would think people would know by now, but, you know, things cease to amaze me. They really do. All right, over at South by Southwest, Loch Lomore has announced that Sesmic is coming out with a whole bunch of stuff that's going to integrate with a lot of different social networks, primarily Facebook. They're going to be doing an improvement to a Twitter application. So if you're a Sesmic fan, I haven't used Sesmic in a while, but you're going to be able to send videos directly to Facebook or Twitter and so forth via these new apps. So keep you advised on that. But if you're a Sesmic fan, you probably already know this, but I have this link up in the show notes. You know, what's interesting, though, is that a lot of the illuminaries, in other words, some of the big name companies, are not at South by Southwest. So companies like Sesmic are getting a lot of attention because they're there and, getting the word out and making connections and stuff. So this is where I think South by Southwest this year is going to be exciting for a lot of smaller companies, because, you know, they're getting a lot of face time with the public, and where a lot of the larger companies are not even there. I'd love to hear from someone that's at South by Southwest what you guys have seen, what your experience has been. You know, I probably should have went. Three or four people asked me if I was going to go, and I don't know. I just didn't attract me that much. And I'm not into this big party thing, going there, and it seems like it's just one big drunk fest at South by Southwest. I guess a lot of business gets done during the day with sessions and so forth. But, you know, after you go to these parties and drink all night, how can you go to the sessions during the day and be effective? I think it would be pretty tough, but I guess it's just, it's a young man's game or a young woman's game, being able to go there and party all night long and then still stay up during the day for the sessions. I'm just too old. I can't do it. I go out to drink like that, I'm done for a week. So moving on here, Comcast customers' passwords found online, and the company has basically said, hey, it wasn't our fault. A digital document containing usernames and passwords of 8,000 Comcast customers has been sitting on the internet for 2 months, but Comcast told the New York Times that it doesn't believe that the document came from within the company. Quote unquote, they say instead the company thinks that the list was related to a phishing attack or something similar, because the list contained duplicate entries and was lacking structured information such as account numbers. So what they're doing here is they're shifting blame back on the customer. So it looks like that this application or this list was downloaded 345 times. I viewed 345 times and downloaded 27 times. So if you're on Comcast, hopefully they'll be contacting all the customers involved. But, you know, change your password. And I guess, do you have to have a – I guess it would be your account password, right? Is your account password the same password you use to log into to mail? That's a question that I can't answer because I'm not a Comcast user. So we'll see what happens. I'm seeing a little chat going on in the Ustream chat. If you please ask the question directly. I only look over here once in a while and format your question better, because I don't know how to respond to what you're asking. Let me go ahead and move on. Big announcement today. The iPhone 3.0 is going to be announced. And there's even some suspicion that maybe Apple will pull a fast one and announce a tablet, possibly during the announcement of iPhone 3.0. So we'll see. Of course, Kevin Rose over at Dignation passed along some secondhand news that the iPhone operating system will include a copy and paste function. That's a function that people have been wanting for a long time. And users are going to be able to really, what they're going to do is double tap on a word, which will bring up a magnified view of the text, then drag two quotes around the section of text they want. and it tells the phone to cut, copy, or paste from a menu. So that's kind of cool. We'll see what happens here. But it's not surprising that the folks from Dig have gotten their hands on the early version of the new application. So, you know, these guys that are, got the connections, they definitely get the stuff first. So we'll see what happens. I wonder if he announced something that Apple didn't want him to announce. That's the question. All right, Microsoft is going to be launching Windows 7 release candidate in May. I don't know if we talked about this on the last show, but it looks like Windows 7 is very quickly maturing. And, of course, everyone is expecting Windows 7 to be out before the holidays. So I'm kind of thinking September, October timeframe, Windows 7 will be on the street. So, you know, they've done a good job here, Windows, Microsoft have, of getting from Vista to getting ready to release Windows 7. Now, the key will be is once they release Windows 7, will they be able to do a turnaround and within a couple of years get the next version of Windows out and go on to a upgrade path that's more similar to Apple? Are they going to be able to do that? That's what's, you know, that's going to be the thing I'm going to be watching for after Windows 7 comes out. But I know many of you are excited about Windows 7. A lot of you are running the beta. I've been using the beta. I really like Windows 7. I really do. Of course, you know, I'm the person that liked Vista as well. So, and there are some fundamental changes in the operating systems as you're playing with it. But lots of information on Windows 7 on the net. And, of course, this information about them having release candidate in May should not come as a surprise. When we talked about the iPod Shuffle last show, we talked about how it had no controls on except for on, off, or play it in loop mode or something, this new the new Shuffle. And over the weekend, some folks tore apart the headset, and they were able to find a chip inside the actual little control, little hand control on the actual earbuds. And of course, immediately people were like conspiracy theory saying it was, oh, it's got a, it's a DRM chip, or, and really what it is and what Apple's come out and said it is, it's a control chip. It sends signals back down the line to the iPod. And really all it is it's basically, you know, when you're clicking on the little button and fast forwarding or you're turning the volume up and down, that little chip sends the signals back to the iPod to make the change. Now, something that's interesting is if you get one of these new headsets, you can use these new headsets and that feature on, I guess, anything that's Gen 3 and above, not on the iPhone. But any iPod Gen 3 and above, these new headsets will work and this function will. So they've had this built in for a while, but they haven't got the, you know, they haven't had the headset out. So my nose is actually going crazy here. Apologize. So anyway, this this chip also is going to be part of what they are assuming is going to be some sort of licensing agreement that headphone manufacturers are going to have to work with Apple, because they're going to have to put this chip in the devices or in the new devices that they're going to be coming out or different manufacturers are going to be coming out with in order to talk back to the actual iPod itself. Now, the question will be is whether or not companies will be able to reverse engineer this. They don't think so, because they think the way that Apple is doing this is they're trying to control even licensing on headsets, you know, because companies could come out with a headset and they didn't have to have any licensing agreement. But with these new controls built in for this specific device, they'll have to. It appears they will have to have some sort of a license with the folks at Apple. So I have a couple articles up on that. If you're of interest, we can go further. Who protects the internet? This is a pretty cool article. It's over on PopSci.com. It's, you know, when I was living in Guam, I was friends with a guy who was involved in laying fiber cable in the ocean. And he was had lived there for a couple of years while they were doing this run from Honolulu to Guam. And I got to go in the place where actually the cable came in and actually basically come into the beach. And it was a, you know, really kind of this I would call it like an armored well, it was a building that was had concrete that was like the walls were like 3 feet thick, and it was a pretty amazing building. It really was. But anyway, I was there when they brought the fiber in, and him and I talked a lot about the technology used. And during when this cable was put down, what they had to use to fix the cable, if there was a break in the cable or if one of the fiber strands or something got broke, they would have to actually go out with three ships. And then they would hook the cable, and I know how far the ships were apart. Let's say, for example, a half mile apart with a ship in the middle, and they actually would kind of, as a group, lift the cable up off the ocean floor. Now, when you get close to Guam, there's the Marianas Trench. It's the deepest part of the ocean that there is. I think it's like 7 miles deep. And what they do is when they laid the cable, they laid the cable on top of the mountain ridges of the Marianas Trench to get it into Guam. And so, you know, the cable is really, really deep. So really no submersible could go to the area to repair it. So, you know, that's why they would use three ships to repair the cable and so forth. But how this relates to this PopSci article is it talks about some guys that are using submersibles that actually, you look at this thing and think, this thing's supposed to be on the ground, but it's actually got tracks like you would have on a dozer. They put the submersible on the ground or in the ocean. It sinks down, and then it actually can sit on the ocean floor and actually can track around. It is way cool. And there's a group of guys that are involved in running this thing. And the way they do it is they actually, when they find it, when there's a cable that's been snagged by an anchor or some drag nets or something like that, and there's been a break, they actually go out and they just cut the cable in half. Then they hook it and they bring both ends up. They bring it on the ship. They do the splicing job. And then they lower the cable back in. It's kind of like they do surgery on it in the ship. Kind of cool the way they were describing it. Tells you how strong this cable really is. But this is a great article. Lots of pictures. 6 different pages here. And I think this is, you know, if you're into this kind of cool stuff on repairing undersea cables, this is a good one for you. Are any of you do rocketry? In other words, amateur rocketry? Either it be the small little ones that you shoot off in your backyards or the real big ones that, you know, go a couple miles in the air. Well, ever since, I guess, 9/11, there has been a ruling in place that these bigger motors that they use in rocketry is, I guess, considered a certain class of explosive. And there's been all kinds of licensing needed, and people have had a hard time getting access to these motors, and it's really put a dampening spirit on the rocketry association and all the people that are doing rocketry in the United States. Well, a judge has granted a summary judgment in favor of basically the rocketry association, denying the judgment, and basically they vacated the classification of these bigger motors as an explosive. So what this means is that those that are in the rocketry field, or those that are, you know, do it as a hobby, are going to have a lot more easy access to these bigger motors, and it's really a win for the hobbyist out there. So this has been under litigation for 9 years. I guess, yes, so this is 2009. It had to happen before 9/11. So it must have been in response to what happened with the federal building with Timothy McVeigh. So it had to be back then, 9 years ago. Couldn't have been 9/11. But anyway, so this is a big win. So I just, you know, I saw this today, and I thought, well, maybe some of the audiences do rocketry. And I think that you guys, if you haven't heard about this, will be excited. Now, speaking of rocket scientists, this is just this is way too cool. You've heard about the missile defense system, right? And America is working on putting satellites up that are going to blast intercontinental ballistic missiles. Well, you know, a rocket scientist has developed a laser system that shoots down mosquitoes. this guy has developed a device that will shoot a laser beam up to 100 feet away. It actually will shoot mosquitoes up to 100 feet away, one by one, with a spot of red light. it's smart enough not to shoot a human, a cat, or a butterfly, but it will only shoot mosquitoes. Now, here's even something that's more amazing. It knows the difference between male and female, and I guess, of course, the females are the bloodsuckers, so they can choose which sex to actually eradicate. So this is cool. This is really cool. You know, think about this for a second. Think about the technology. You little itsy-bitsy mosquito, and this thing can shoot them and kill them from 100 feet. You know, you think about that for a second. You're like, whoa, that's accurate, especially a mosquito on the move. They don't say if they get them on the move. I don't know if they have to be sitting still or not. But I could see this being a very popular thing in people's backyards. All right. For those of you that are down in Austin this week, I guess if you are a iPhone user, you've had a very hard time making phone calls, getting data services. The 3G network has virtually been dead because just not enough capacity. So AT&T has turned up the spectrum in Austin, quote unquote, and I haven't heard if it's gotten any better or not, but I think they rolled in some mobile towers and stuff. But I guess this is not the first time there's been complaints in the Austin area by AT&T customers. If you can't keep service on, it's not good. Now here, this is an interesting comment by Chris Brogan, or actually Chris Brown. He says, "Dear AT&T, if we could break up, I would. In Austin, you're Chris Bond and I'm Rihanna." Oh, that's how they broke up. This was written by an R&B singer who, let me back up. That was dumb. They put that, the way they wrote that on the website, basically it was an analogy to this thing that happened between the gal that got assaulted by the R&B singer. So, but yeah, people weren't too happy with AT&T. Not a lot of positive things being said on websites. I'm so dense. I yeah. Oh, gosh. All right. Asa Dulzer has very, very strong words. I mean, this is like, wow. And, you know, Asa is involved in the development of Firefox. And I would really like to hear from anyone that's vision impaired that listens to the show. I know we have a number of listeners that are vision impaired. And he says, Apple doesn't care about blind people. It says Safari and Chrome, so I guess he's including Google here, are absolute failures when it comes to exposing ARIA. I guess that is some sort of accessibility requirement. But it says when it comes to exposing ARIA rules through, geez, I wish he wouldn't have abbreviated all this, MSAA. So accessibility isn't an afterthought at Mozilla. It's core to what we do. Apparently, it's not even that at Google and Apple. At least Opera and IE are trying. He has an update. He says, building a fully functional web browser is not an easy task, and building one that is accessible to everyone is that much more difficult. If Apple and Google don't care about users who require assistive technologies, that's a real shame. From where I stand, it looks like they're not really even trying. Chrome gets a zero, and Safari is only a tiny bit better. Maybe they're going to improve, but it tells you something about their priorities when users with disabilities don't make the cut for a 1.0 and a 4.0 release. So this is strong words by the folks over at Firefox. I'd love to hear from some vision impaired people. You know, what's your experience? Are you guys using a Safari? Are you using Chrome? How is Firefox actually doing in your opinion? Or are you using IE? You know, I'd really, you know, let's hear from the people that are using the technology instead of someone that is creating technology. geeknews@gmail.com, or you can call the voicemail hotline. Shout out to us at 619-342-7365. Going to move on here. I got a pretty cool article over on discoverymagazine.com, and it's a snapshot of Galactic Doom. And for those of you that are big science buffs, space buffs, you'll definitely want to check this out. It basically shows two different universes colliding in the essentially the upcoming destruction that's going to occur because of it. And I have this linked up in the show notes, and a pretty good article on that. It gives you some basic science information for those of you that are new to astronomy. Okay, there's a good article over on Ars Technica talking about how to Twitter followers and influence people. I spent the weekend clearing out in my Twitter account people that don't follow me. And I also at the very same time was adding people that followed me. And it really made a big, big difference because I didn't know that I was following, you know, like 4,000 people and or 4,100 people. And then there was like 3,800 or something like that that was following me. But when I went out and used some of the tools, I found out that over 1,000 people that I were following were not following me back, and over 800 people that were following me, I wasn't following them. And I thought, oh, that's not good. You know, someone's following me, and they're taking the time to follow. I should go check them out. So I'm trying to close that gap. Still got a ways to go. I think I've got about 300 people that I need to review and approve, and then probably another 300 I need to get rid of. But I think that's an important thing, you know, is to make sure that you look at the accounts. And I wrote an article about this on Geek News Central as well, that we're starting to see, I see a lot of scammer accounts. I mean, almost immediately, if I look at a profile and it says anything about marketing, online marketing, MLM, anything like that, immediately I unfollow. Because usually the URL that is associated with that account leads to some scammer site that's trying to sell you some sort of miracle cure or trying to get you involved in some business that you can do from home, or, you know, it's the full Monty of different types of scams that are out there. And I understand there are some home businesses that are legitimate and people do very well with. So don't get me wrong. But when I see some of these, I come to some of these web pages and say, hey, for $19.99, you can buy my online ebook that tells you how to do this. No. You know, that's not the person I want to follow. I don't care if they're following me or not. So I unfollowed a lot of people. And, you know, a lot of those folks, they're really worried about their ratios, and they immediately unfollowed when I unfollowed them. So I, you know, good riddance. They are gone. And if you're one of those online marketing types, you know, I look at every account. I look at your web pages that you have linked to your Twitter accounts, and I go through and make sure that you're worth following. And I think it's very, very important. So anyway, if you're following me and I'm not following you, just give me a few days. I'm still going to continue to clean up. Again, this is catch-up week here at the homestead. And it's made a big difference because I've gained like 300 followers over the last couple of days. So it's made a big difference. But if you're working on, you know, what to do and how to utilize Twitter, there's some good advice here, 4 or 5 different suggestions you can use to make sure that people keep on following you and don't leave you when they think you're trying to sell you something. Now, everything has been about netbooks, cheap netbooks. We haven't heard a lot about notebooks that are, you know, nice ones, expensive ones. Well, Dell is going to be releasing tomorrow. It's called the Atomo, A-D-A-M-O. It's a laptop that starts out at $1,999. Yes, that's $1,999. It's a 13-inch laptop that is a super powerhouse. Haven't heard a lot about it, except we saw one at CES that was kind of displayed, but it really was in like this case. You couldn't look too close. It was a mock-up. But they're rolling out this Atomo line in, I guess, 40-some countries, or 24 countries on the 26th. And we're going to see it tomorrow. I guess it was at South by Southwest today. Some people got a look at it. But if you're looking for a high-end notebook, Dell may have one for you here to check out. Okay. Lenovo, a mystery picture has appeared on the internet. It's called, they're calling it the Pocket Yoga. But it kind of looks like this the Sony Vaio that's tiny. But I tell you, one thing Lenovo does good, they really make their stuff look, you know, they probably do styling as good as Apple does. This thing is slick. And I don't know where this picture came from, if it came from China. But Lenovo is going to be releasing, looks like, a little pocket notebook as well. And Lenovo's been pretty good on performance on most of their machines. I'm sure it will be very, very expensive. But there's not really a name for this thing. But I'll have the link up to it in the show notes if you're a Lenovo fan on their particular notebooks. A lot of complaints by Netflix users who have been using the Watch Instantly service. It appears that some users are getting slower downloads of the movies, almost to the point where it's unusable. So if you are a Netflix user and you're using their Watch Instantly service, I'd like to hear from you on whether or not you've seen a slowdown in your service. Hey, over on Robin Good's website, I'm a big external editor user when I'm blogging, and Robin's got a post here with 10 to 15 external blogging tools, and the post is entitled Best Offline Blog Editors and Web Publishing Tools Mini Guide, and the one that I use is called BlogJet, and it's number 6 on the list, and it used to be a paid application, but there's a lot of applications here I was not familiar with, so I'm going to be checking those out. Of course, Windows Live Writer and some of the ones that you all should be familiar with are here, but pretty good list of external editors. And he's got a comparison of them and done a review, so you can check that out. And really the reason why I like external editors is it just kind of makes me feel like I'm in a, you know, like in a regular Word session, and I can edit stuff and drop images in and not have to worry about the formatting. Yes, you guys are having to deal with me having a cold tonight. I apologize again for coughing and sneezing on you and sniffling. But probably should have took something to dry myself out. But then I would have been like sleeping during the show. All right, what do you do to protect your online life after you die? I think I've talked about this a little bit in the shows in the past. There's a new site called Legacy Locker. It's being recommended by Scoble. And, you know, I think this makes a lot of sense. You know, you never know what's going to happen tomorrow. You could be driving down the road and get broadsided by a vehicle, and that's it. You're done. And, you know, does your family have your passwords? Do they have your logins? Can they access your server? I tell you what I've done, and one thing that I use here that I've kind of used as a way. And let me get this the name of the application for you. It's called let me load it here. It's called KeePass, and it's just a little application, and it requires a password. My wife, my mom, everyone has the password to my KeePass application, and I have it on more than one machine, and I actually keep a copy of my KeePass account backed up on drives that go into my safety deposit box, but it uses, you know, it's basically the same password on every machine that this is loaded on, and I have to kind of take some time to keep them synced up. But that KeePass has all of my logins, all my usernames, all my passwords, has server logins, has all this stuff that's so that, you know, banking account information, everything that in case if something happens to me, you know, if I'm driving down the road and some idiot, you know, or if I have a heart attack or, you know, whatever it may be, if I end up not being here tomorrow, they will be able to come in and load this application up and at least have the usernames and passwords to get access to stuff. How many of you have done that? It's important that you have this data someplace. And I think these services like this, Legacy Locker, will provide people, you know, some safe havens to put data and information. You know, the thing I'm worried about is if something happens to me, I want my podcast to stay up. You know, something my kids can come back in 10 years and listen to and go through and maybe get some insights on Dad that maybe they didn't. And I'm not saying anything's going to happen to me, but, you know, it's important that the websites stay online. And, you know, we had a podcaster here in Hawaii that died recently. reached out to his family to see if we could get access to his stuff to try to maybe help salvage it and keep it online. And really, no one has any information. And basically, what's going to happen is when his hosting account comes up for renewal and no one pays the bill, it'll be gone. So, you know, we can do as much to scrape it as much as we can, but it's not the same as keeping it online. As I'm getting towards the end of the show here, I'm getting worse. All right, moving on from that subject. Seattle Paper shifts entirely to the web. Another online, or actually another print, another print newspaper has bit the dust. They reduced from 165 people down to 20. And so the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, I guess that's the name of the newspaper, tough economic times and changing way people can consume media, it definitely affected them. Okay, we're at the end of the regular content tonight. thank goodness we are, because I'm like getting worse here, and I think it's going to be time to go find some good meds. But I do have some voicemails. We'll get into those. And I also have some email as well. So let me go ahead and knock these out real quick. Again, my sincere apologies for coughing and sneezing and sniffling in your ear tonight. And I may actually go back and try to clean up some of those real bad spots. But it's just, I guess it's the name of the game. Can't be perfect all the time, can I? So let me go ahead and play the first voicemail. It's a pretty long one. And I haven't previewed these, so hopefully these are actually listener comments. So here comes, again, 619-342-7365 is the voicemail number. It's plus one for those of you overseas, plus one, 619-342-7365, geeknews@gmail.com.
Hey, Todd. Tom Wiles here, a.k.a. Trucker Tom. Didn't mean to, I hope I didn't stir up a hornet's nest with my comments regarding OS X, and I don't want to
not
come
at
across
all
as a fanboy for OS X, because I'm not, even though it might sound like it. I agree with you. There is far more software for Windows, and that's why I keep it around in a virtual machine form. You know, I have a mapping program, and I haven't found any mapping program that adequately replaces what I have available for Windows. I'm using an old version 9 of Street Atlas USA. Very happy with it. Continues to work, and it works fine in a virtual machine. Another reason that I've kind of, you know, that I really like OS X is the vast majority of Windows installations that I've dealt with over the years end in disaster. Either my own will eventually, something goes haywire with them, or the people that I've been around, friends and relatives. And, you know, a number of years ago, I just learned to keep my mouth shut whenever I was around people that were talking about their problems with their computers. Just learned to keep my mouth shut because, for a long time I kept getting sucked into all of these, well, will you help me work, fix my computer type things? And people will just, sometimes people will really take advantage of that. So the cure for that, by the way, is to either keep your mouth shut or start charging, and that usually gets rid of most of them if you start charging. And, you know, overall, I'm just kind of tired of jumping through hoops. And I'm willing to pay the price not to have to. Now, I have to agree with you that the Mac Pros are pretty overpriced for what you're getting. I think with the Mac Pros in particular, they're really aiming at a kind of a really professional market, as well as you've got this coolness factor, this really powerful machine, really sleek design box, and there. So part of that is a coolness factor, and I won't pay for that. I'm happy with this MacBook Pro 17-inch that I've got. Very happy with it. It does what I want it to. Powerful enough, and you know, so I don't see myself paying thousands of dollars to get a Mac Pro. That's not going to happen. Anyhow, keep up the great work. We'll catch you later.
Hey, Tom, thanks for the call, and greatly appreciate the feedback. And, yeah, I've learned that, too, over the years. many times I just tell people it's time for a new machine, and why don't you go out and buy a new computer? And when you do, make sure you get, all the stuff loaded on it that you need to have loaded on it that you didn't have loaded on it before. And I usually give them a list. And but I haven't been asked in a long time. I think the last time I was asked was maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And it was an aunt. It was at a Christmas party. And I sat there for like 3 hours trying to clean this thing up because she'd been on all these different poker sites and it was not good. It really, really wasn't. So I think, though, that's one thing I do say about the Mac so far is that really I've had no, it updates and does its own thing, and it just works. I haven't had a virus on a PC in a long time either, but it's because I have all the stuff in there to protect it, and I know not to do stupid things. Especially with browsers that are more likely to cause you to get hacked and so forth. But nothing is perfect. So that's why I have offsite storage. That's why I have a Windows Home server that essentially keeps a backup image file of every machine. And if a machine dies, all I have to really do here is drop a DVD in the machine and put a new drive in. And a couple hours later, the machine's restored back to a point that I want to choose from. But same thing with Time Machine, of course, as well. But, one thing we never did, Tom, is I've got a whole bunch of comments from listeners, the Mac versus PC thing. And that's something with all these traveling I've been doing, I never went into. So maybe just for fun on the next show, I'll print those out and we'll go through those on the show. What do you think? Think we'll have a little fun with it? And, it's not a bashing thing. It's just a little light humored fun. All right, here's the next voicemail. This one's a short one, so I don't know if this is actually a listener comment or not. We'll find out.
Secondly, I will not waste your time.
Oh.
If you'd like to be removed, push button number 9.
Push number 9, huh? I'm on some call list, folks. They're calling my voicemail hotline and trying to sell me something. You know times are tough. All right, here's the next one. Maybe this is another one. We'll see.
Hey, Todd, this is Bennett.
Hey.
I'm from Philly again. You were talking about on your last show about an iPhone, and they're coming out with a 3.0 update.
Yep.
And they got a lot of new features and stuff. What I'm trying to figure out is, I'm hearing a lot of reasons, but I'm not sure which one is legit. Why won't they put Flash in the iPhone or the iPod Touch at all? Like, is it going to hurt their business at all? Wouldn't that help them, if anything?
You think it would.
And I just don't understand, like, why is it not in Safari? And to my understanding, a lot of touchscreen phones are doing that. So why are they, like, they're the one who basically brought the touchscreen to the phone front. They're, like, the innovator of it, and they're, like, slacking behind on basically, I consider a completely important feature. Just wanted to know your thoughts on that, and I love listening.
Hey, thanks for maybe you didn't love listening tonight, hearing me sniffle on you, but I don't know. There's a lot of speculation. It may be that the iPhone doesn't have enough horsepower underneath the hood to handle Flash. Maybe it's they really look at what they put on the phone to make sure everyone has a good user experience. There is no way you can run applications in the background. Maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know. But I agree. It's something that's missing and it's needed. It's really annoying to load a site and it's got Flash and you're like, oh, well, I guess I'm not viewing what's on this page. And who knows? Maybe it drives up page views because people load it up in their regular computer and go to the pages that way instead. But your guess is as good as mine. Maybe some of the audience members have some other opinions. Again, 619-342-7365. If you want to submit something to the show, overseas users, +1. 619-342-7365. Got an email from Near. Say, hey, Todd, I wonder what you and your listeners think about the price of Flash reaching almost $1 a gigabyte. How much lower can it go? I don't know. I think it's going to continue to get lower. just because it's just the way things work in, you know, storage. I think it's just going to keep going down. Got an email from Tony. Hey, I just realized I didn't send you a link to the applications monitors to the application. Oh, actually, where did I miss your first email, Tony? Let me look up here. Oh, he said, okay, here's the second part. He says, hey, Todd, I'm a longtime listener. When I heard you put out the call for our favorite smartphone apps, I just had to drop you a note, tell you and your listeners about the app I use the most on my BlackBerry. While the newer BlackBerries have multimedia capabilities and come with a media player, it basically sucks for podcast or audiobook formats. I've been searching high and low for months trying to find a good audio player that allows you to bookmark your spot in an audio file. The problem has been that I could listen with most audio players, but once I stopped, restarting required me to manually find my spot again in the audio file. I understand that completely. So then along came PodTrapper. This application is an audio file that is optimized for podcast, although it works well for audiobooks as well. The main features I like include it allows you to search for podcasts, automatically subscribe without having to cut paste the URL. You can download via the data network or Wi-Fi. If you have a limited data plan or no Wi-Fi, there is Windows Companion Program that lets your BlackBerry use your computer's connection to download podcasts. It groups all of your podcasts by podcaster, and it can be configured to automatically delete a show once you finish listening to it. While the interface is not immediately intuitive, once you understand what the icons mean, it is the best interface out there for managing podcasts on a mobile device. The best feature is that the developer is incredibly responsive to feature requests and problem reports. He logs everything in his website, and PodTrapper even has the ability to email the developer with the problem right from within the application. You can find this at versatilemonkey.com. So I'll have a link up in the show notes to this. As another testament to developers' incredible support, I came across a bug in the application this morning and used the built-in feature to email the developer. The feature lets you optionally attach log files from the application, so I did. I told him the problem I was having, and within a few hours, he emailed me back with a link to a new version that fixes the problem. How cool is that? That is cool. So thanks for sharing, Tony. That's the kind of stuff we want from listeners. That is exactly what we're looking for. For, you know, finding out all these cool applications for different phones. There's one for the BlackBerry folks. I have the link up to you, for you in the show notes. Got an email from Jim. He says, Kevin Rose of Dig has come out with a new website called WeFollow.com, and it's basically a popularity site. And if you're a Twitter user, you can tag your Twitter account with three different tags. And it basically shows you where you rank in that Twitter list or in that tag list. Just another popularity thing. And you know what? It was cool for a day when you're listed at number 20, but you come back a week later and you're listed number 5,687. It's worthless. Thanks, Jim. I do appreciate it. We'll see what kind of traction it gets. But again, I think it's just going to be a popularity thing. I got an email from Tim. He said, hey, Todd, for those of your listeners enjoying flight simulators online, so via VATSIM, I just want to let you know about a major attack on our network that is affecting thousands of people who enjoy flight simulators online with ATC. Maybe you can add this to your podcast or help spread the news of what's going on. The main VATSIM website hasn't really made any mention about it quite yet. For those who don't play flight simulator online at all, VATSIM is an online network that allows you to connect to other pilots and air traffic control to bring the simulation as real as it gets. It's incredibly realistic with controllers and pilots following all the exact rules and procedures as you would in real life, with levels of ATC service from clearance at the airport gates to cruising with an air traffic control center spanning hundreds of miles. That's cool. My virtual airline at UnitedTechVirtual.com, President David Klan, is also a member of the board of the VATSIM network. It's really unbelievable. I can see the attacks on the banks or government websites, but a large network with media core popularity that is simply used to create a virtual air traffic control for would-be pilots to enjoy, it's just insane. All I want to do is enjoy my virtual world and being an airline pilot for virtual airline as a way to escape my 14-hour workday I had Friday, and I can't even do that. It's simply amazing how one person can mess it up so many. I hope VATSIM or any other network continues to grow, that better security protection is made in the future. So basically, they are under a denial of service attack. And interesting, I don't know if Tim is a – I think Tim's a longtime listener of the show. And Just want to get the word out there. If any of you are using this, made me intrigued enough to want to go check it out. hopefully the denial of attack has quit on their site. So anyway, thanks, Tim, for sending that. Hey, Michael sent me an email. Said, hey, Todd, you probably run across this, but the Dell Mini 9 makes a real decent Hackintosh. For my 40th birthday, I ordered one, and it arrives tomorrow. I'll spend some time seeing how Ubuntu works on it, but will quickly be archiving the 16-gig SSD drive, installing OS 10. I plan on blogging, Twittering the effort, but if there's anything in particular you'd like to focus on that you may want to know yourself for the podcast, please let me know. YouTube is full of videos, but Andy Intaco did a good one on his effort, and it's on Vimeo. Take care and welcome back to the States, Mike. Have fun with it, and definitely tell us about your progress. So, hey, Todd, Brian in Poland here, actually now in Orlando. Oh, so I guess you moved. I'm sorry. First, a side note. I saw the most recent space shuttle launch from here in Orlando yesterday, and it was awesome. I had seen it once before as a child. The launch was immediately after sunset and led to a spectacular show. As it was going up, I admired a really incredible orange glow in the smoke trail. At first, I thought the color was from the flame of the rocket. It just looked like a child's drawing of a rocket blasting off. However, I then realized that the color was from the filtered sunlight that was striking it, like the clouds of a beautiful sunset. As the shuttle rose higher, the color of the trail changed from orange to bright white. The trail higher up was being struck by unfiltered pure sunlight as the shuttle passed completely out of the Earth's shadow. Awesome. And Brian, on your other thing that you sent me an email on, I've already taken care of that. Hope you get word here soon. Got another email from Jason. He says, hey, Todd, I'm just listening to your March 10th podcast and had two things to say. First off, you mentioned you were going to review iPhone apps. I knew that you mentioned you wanted to focus on tech apps, but if you want to review my game, make me say that I gave you some promo codes before. I would appreciate it. Just to remind you, it's a word game for 4+ people where you need to get team members to guess your word. Also, if you wanted more promo codes to give away after you do, I can send you 5 more. The other thing was about the use of BitTorrent by governments to distribute content. In Canada, the CBC tried releasing a show of it using BitTorrent. However, it became very controversial since all the ISPs in Canada throttle BitTorrent, so users complain about the very slow downloads. Here's an article. Thanks for that, Jason. I appreciate it. Yeah, we'll put your app in the review list here, probably for the next show. Got an email from Andrew. Hey, Todd, first I'd like to offer condolences to you and your family on the loss of your grandmother. It sounds like she had quite a life, and your comments about her were very touching. Thanks, Andrew. I do appreciate that. She did have a great life. He says, and on to a different note, here are a few links. Alltop.com launches My Alltop, and Kevin Rose launches a Twitter directory called We Follow. Yep. And a free electronic fax service up to 2 a day, up to 10 pages. I'll have that linked up. And all the best, Andrew. So, Andrew, thanks for those links. I appreciate it. Hey, I want to take just a few minutes here at the end of the show, and I probably should have talked about it at the beginning, but I've been getting more and more, and this is podcast related, folks. So if you want to leave, you can. But I've been talking to, again, a lot of emails from podcasters who are being offered contracts by podcasting companies. And they ask me, Todd, what do you think? And some of them were nice enough to send me the actual contract language. And while I won't go into the details of the contract language, because I don't think that's right, all I can really say is that if you're a podcaster and you're considering signing a contract with a company, you really need to sit down and think about what it's worth and what you're giving up. The cost of hosting today is virtually nothing. So if you're signing a contract to get free hosting, really think about it. Also, if you're signing a contract to become something exclusive, you need to think about what you could be losing in the 1 or 2 years that you're locked into this contract. You know, you never know what's going to pop up tomorrow. If you're signing a contract because you think that being a member of that particular network is going to give you more exposure, you ought to ask people that are in the network that appear to be have signed contracts and see if they've gotten more exposure for being part of the network. You also should ask them, what kind of money are you really making? Because what I saw and what I read was that some of the contracts are such that I guess for a better word, there's no guarantees of making anything. And there can be a manipulation of your content. I'm a big advocate of podcasters retaining control of their content at all times. Explore your options. Choose wisely. Don't go out and sign something. Get a lawyer to look at the agreement. Make sure that there isn't something there where you're giving up control. You're giving away your content for free. People are going to be making money off it. Talk to people that are no longer in contracts. Talk to people that are currently in those contracts. Be careful, okay? We went through this a long, long time ago, and there was lots of discussion points about podcasters signing contracts. One thing I will say is that if you are a podcaster and you're working with my company, Raw Voice, and not in any one of our communities, no contracts are signed. We don't, you know, basically, you can say, I don't want to be part of your community just by sending an email to us and remove you. If you're in an ad deal, really the ad deal is for the length of the contract of the ad deal. So that's really the only, and really the contract you're in is to do the advertising, just for the time of the period of the advertising. Besides that, you're really not locked into anything. And we definitely don't want to control content. We don't want exclusivity. We want you to go out and build your own shows to the levels that you so desire. Do it the way you want to do it. Get as much maximum exposure as you can to your podcast across multiple websites. So really, you know, think before you sign something. You think about what you're giving away and how it's going to affect your show as it grows. For some people, that may be the right choice. You may decide that's the way I want to go. But in my opinion, don't come crying to me a year later saying, Todd, how do I get my media off this service? Or how do I get people back to my website because everyone's subscribed through the site I'm on or whatever it may be. So be careful out there. Protect your intellectual property. And if you do, you'll be much, I think, in my opinion, you'll be much happier in the long run. Build it on your own. And, you know, use all the other resources out there. There's lots of ways to build your show audience. And using Twitter, using Facebook, using all the different social sites, on boards where people are talking about the same type of topics that you cover in your show. There's lots of ways to build your audience. So that's all I really wanted to say on that. It's a little kind of a, you know, just a thing for me basically telling you all to be careful. And I did it at the end of the show. Probably should have done it at the beginning. But if you know a podcaster is thinking about signing a contract, send them to this show and send them to the end and tell them to listen to this. And if nothing else, get a lawyer. Make sure that what you're signing is something that they feel is in your best interest. Okay, that's it. I'll be back hopefully feeling much better on Friday. I want to thank all of you for hanging out with me. And as always, definitely appreciate all of you that are part of the Ohana. And those of you that are new to the show, I promise I won't be sniffling on you the next podcast. But I had to get the show out tonight. But as always, geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com. Voicemail hotline is 619-342-7365. And as always, until next time, take care and aloha.